So thank you guys for coming.
I want to tell you that I'm probably one of the most insecure people that you'll ever meet. I question myself and my my abilities on a regular basis, both in my personal life and my spiritual life. And so what I want to do is talk to you about something that the Lord has been working in me and through me for the last, I don't know, 20 plus years since I've been saved, and more specifically over the last maybe a year and a half. And I still don't completely understand or follow. I just don't. But what I want to talk to you about is how you deal with trials and temptations. These are the important questions of life that we need to come to understand. Let me start off with asking you a couple rhetorical questions. So when a trial comes, do you immediately think, what did I do to deserve this? Or is there anything that I've done to cause this trial to come? I've said this before and I'll say it again because I find it so true. The human believer is in one of three phases. The human is either in one of three phases. They're either in the middle of a trial, getting out of a trial, or unbeknownst to them, getting ready to go into one. Find that true? Or is it just me? It's just a roller coaster of waves of trial after trial after trial after trial after trial. So I want to tell you the story. When I was a little younger, about 14, I guess, and kids, this is before we had video games and cell phones and the internet, you know, those neat things. But we were big time in bicycles in my neighborhood. I was a BMX fan. We had bikes. All my friends had bikes. We had the coolest ramps. I lived down on the south end of Kent Island. We had the coolest ramps. We were it. We had ramps. We had quarter pipes. We had half pipes. We had all kinds of crazy, crazy things down through the woods where I grew up. So one day, my mother, because, you know, as well, we didn't have big department stores over here on the shore, so we did a lot of our shopping like that across the bridge. And we went to a store called Caldor. It's since gone, but it was in Severna Park. It was a big store, had all the different departments in it. And they had a bike section, which was very, very cool. I liked the bike section. So we walked through the door. I went my way. I was working. I went my way, and I had some money in my pocket. And my mom went off and did her thing. My sister went somewhere. I don't even know where she went. I wasn't too concerned about where she went, actually. So I went to the bike aisle. And the main purpose of my trip was to get a set of handlebars. And I found the most awesome set of handlebars. Back then, it was all chrome. Chrome is what you were going for. So I went, and I got these handlebars. I picked them out, and I went up to the front counter, and I paid for these handlebars. Then I went back, and I checked in with my mom, and I decided to go back to the bikes. Well, then, you know, I was looking at all the things, and I realized I didn't have any money, and thought came into my mind, and I could use a whole lot more of this stuff. And I figured it was a big store. Everything was, well, there was plentiful, you know, things on the shelf, and what would it make a difference if I just took a few things? It's a big store, a lot of inventory, nobody'd know. I must have put 15 things in that bag. I had a big bag. I must have put 15 things in this bag. And I go and I'm back to my mom and I'm like, Mom, I'm really tired. I need to go to the car. Can I have the keys? She said, I'm not giving you the keys. I must have done it 3 times. Okay. Then she got wise. She said, come here, boy. So let me see your bag. She opened my bag. And then she accused me of stealing. And I denied it. I said, no, Mom. I would never do that. Not me. I really bought it. I just lost my receipt. And just, I don't know what happened. Well, Michael, you have the receipt for the handlebars. Where's the receipt for the rest of the stuff? So I started apologizing, right? Because I knew I was hooked. And I'm begging her, Mom, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. She says, you know, son, I knew something was going on with you, but I just couldn't put my finger on it. Something was awry. But here's what we're going to do. You're going to get turned in. The craziest thing that my mother has ever said to me, you're going to get turned in. I'm like, oh, whoa, wait a minute, Mom. That's not good. That's not good. I'm a man now. You know, I could get put in jail. You know, please don't do that. Please don't do that. I'll just go and put everything back. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. We'll come back to that story a little later. So last week, PT brought us a word from Colossians 3, where it says, since then you have been raised with Christ. Set your hearts on things above where Christ is, seated at the right hand of God. Set your minds on things above, not on earthly things. Take a small little sidebar. Who you believe Christ to be makes all the difference in your world. You must know in your origin that Christ is victorious over sin and death, and he now sits at the right hand of the Father, ordaining things happening. Because look, if I believe in the sweet little 8-pound baby Jesus, he's no help to me. If I believe that he's 12 years old in the temple, talking to the masters of the day, he's no good to me. He's just knowledge. If I think of him as someone that is walking with his disciples, cursing fig trees and shouting at people in the temple, he's not going to be any help to me. If I see him as defeated up on the cross with no way of coming down, he's not going to be any help to me. But if I believe that he has defeated the cross and has been risen from the dead and is seated now in the heavenlies, now we've got something, right? As Ashley said, my Jesus is alive. He makes a difference in my life. So getting back to setting your minds on things above, when exactly does that happen? Setting your minds and hearts on things above. I talked to you about my time in the submarine force. Okay? There's 155 guys. I was on a fast attack submarine. 155 guys. We didn't have enough guys to be, you know, have a fire department or have a power plant casualty team or, oh no, the water's coming in, having a catastrophe team, or when we're in port, repelling boarders, having people come and trying to take over our sub. We were it. And part of the whole idea was every single person on a fast attack sub, on any sub, has to be qualified ships. So as far as the water system, you needed to know where every major valve was in the ship. You needed to know where every high pressure line was, because that's a problem too. High pressure, 35,000 psi running through that boat would cut you in half if there's a leak. It's important to understand all of these things. It's important to understand where the fire extinguishers are, where the breathing apparatuses are, where the lines are that you can plug in. Because if you don't, you're going to die, right? So that's setting your mind on something. That's practicing and practicing and practicing. You know why we practice? So when the casualty happens, we don't think we do. That's the deal. Sound like discipleship? I mean, that's what we're supposed to do. It doesn't say go out and make new converts. It says go out and make disciples of all nations. That's what it's about. It's about relationship, and it's about walking through life with people. So it requires a forethought and an understanding. So the text that I want to dig into today is 1 Corinthians 10, 11 through 13. And we just heard that this is one of the items where Paul was talking. He was getting ready to go into one of their issues with eating together. But I want to talk to you about this specific text in a way that, you know, when you're looking at reading the Bible, it's probably one of the most important things that we can do as believers. Is there's three phases in reading the Bible. We have to observe, right? We have to read the text. We have to observe it. And then we have to, what? Come on, tell me. Somebody tell me. Huh? Interpret it, right? We have to understand what it meant to them, right? And then we have to apply it. And that's how what it meant to them and how I can apply it and use it in my life. Okay? Now, it's going to sound a little bit strange, but this is the teaching in between the lines, right? And that's the Spirit. The Spirit is talking to you. When you start to do those things, this is what He has for you in between the lines, right? This is the Spirit coming in and making things come alive so you can understand it. It's so important that we do that. He has many, many things for us when we stand humbly before Him and we ask the Spirit to show us, illuminate to us what the truths are in His Word. So again, 1 Corinthians 10, 11 through 13, it says, "These things happened to them as examples and were written down as warnings for us, on whom the culmination of the ages has come. So if you think you are standing firm, be careful that you don't fall. It says, no temptation has overtaken you except that which is common to man. And God is faithful. He will not let you be tempted beyond what you can bear. But when you are tempted, He'll also provide a way out or a way of escape so that you can endure it." These things that we're referring to, that Paul is referring to as he's talking to these people, they were from the Israelites. As you know, God had started to work amongst Pharaoh and his people in Egypt. He gave all these plagues, and the people were able to see all these plagues happening, but it wasn't happening to them. He saw the protection of God. They saw the protection of God on them. And all through the wilderness, all these things happened. If you would, go back and look at all these things. But he tells us that these are the stories of God's people that are found all over the place in the Bible, but more specifically in the preceding verses, 1 through 10. So then in verse 12, this is kind of an odd statement in the middle of it. He says, "So if you think you are standing, take heed, lest you fall." So this is if you think that you got it all wrapped up together, you ain't got this. You ain't got this. This is to take heed means to consider or ponder, to think about the things that you've seen happen to other people that looked squared away. You know what's very interesting to me, and it's helped me in my own walk. I would look at people and I would fantasize about being like them. It's the warden and what was her name? June Cleaver, right? Syndrome. It's everybody's great everywhere else but my house. Everybody's got it going on. But you know what? The more I deal with people, the more I realize that you're all messed up. You're just as messed up as me. I mean, that is comforting and encouraging altogether. Altogether. I mean, we should never think that we've arrived. Because look, pride cometh before the fall. We will fall, and we will fall hard. It's Christ who makes us stand. We've got nothing. We got nothing. Every single thing that we have, He has given us. He's given us. He's given us the assuredness that we have. He's given us our talents. He's given us our money. He's given us our house. He's given us our jet skis. He's given everything to us. So you may or may not be familiar with this story. I'm going to just sum it up. I'm going to paraphrase it. It's called the MJW version. That's Michael Jeremy Windsor version. It's not really not the best. You really shouldn't stake your life on it. Stick with the good ones. But this is the Last Supper, and it's found in Luke 22. And Jesus is talking to his disciples at his table, and he makes a statement about the one that's going to betray him is sitting right there in front of him. And there's three disciples, the cocky ones, Peter, James, and John, and they're arguing amongst themselves of who's going to sit at the right hand of Jesus in his kingdom. Okay? And they go all through, and Jesus basically tells them, look, it's about serving. It's not about who's going to be sitting in authority. Right? And then he looks straight at Peter and he says, Peter, Satan has asked to sift you as wheat. I prayed for you, Peter, that when you fall, that you come back and you strengthen your brothers. Incidentally, this is our proof that we will not fail because Jesus has prayed for us. Right? He doesn't lose any that are his. The Bible says so. Right? Think of it this way. Peter, he obviously had the wrong perspective. Right? He's the one that cut off Malchus's ear. That's a pretty strong thing for him to do. See, he thought he was going to sit at the right hand of the Father. He thought that it was a kingdom that Jesus was going to win by force. When our perception shifts, I don't know about you, but man, my actions shift. If I go into something thinking one thing and it's something else, oh my goodness. I'm not going to be signing up for that deal. Okay? So, I want to focus on verse 13. Where he says, no temptation has overtaken you except what is common to mankind. And God is faithful. He will not let you be tempted beyond what you can bear. But when you are tempted, He will also provide a way out or way of escape so that you can endure it. The word for temptation, parosmos, check this out. This is unbelievable. It can be translated either temptation or test. But both senses can apply together at the same time. Pretty interesting. The positive sense, the test, and the negative sense, the temptation, are functions of the context, not merely words themselves. In this case, in this verse, they apply, both of them apply. So please follow me here because this is very, very important. It is in regard to your perspective, to your understanding. They can be connected, and God allows life circumstances to show up in the form of testing. Okay, everybody agree to that? Maybe not so much. Tell me more. His purpose in testing is to mold you more and more into the shape of His Son. He wants to make you more like Jesus. He has given us the free will, though, to choose. And when we walk to the beat of our own drum, we can be tempted inside of this test. We have the propensity to choose to react with evil intent, to sin, when we entertain the temptation and we discard the test. Once the test becomes a solicitation of the heart, it becomes a temptation. Temptation, in other words, is an inward solicitation resulting from an outward test. You guys ride by combines, right? So let's look at that in the circumstance of life happenings that God allows to test us in our lives. So his perspective of a struggle at work, or a loss of a job, or a loss of a family member, or put in whatever test that you want to think about. His perspective is that of which a combine is made for. The idea is that it was made to harvest the grain, right? But in the middle of that process, there's something that happens where the husk is taken out, like a chaff, right? And it's spit out the back of the machine. If you're standing on the backside of a combine, that looks really messy. Really messy, right? But if you're sitting up in the chair and you're seeing the hopper get full with corn, it's a beautiful thing. It's different perspectives, right? Now, in the middle of that test, guess what? We wrestle not against flesh and blood, right? We wrestle against principalities and rulers and darkness in this world that we live in, right? Satan's going to take that test and try to convince you that it's not about making the kernels come up in the hopper. It's about kicking you out the back as chaff. You guys follow that? It's the same process. It's the same process, but it's the perspective. It's understanding what the situation is for. So God tests us to produce good things. We can have the wrong perception and therefore act in negative ways. So testing is the circumstance that looks for the positive result. To further explain it, let's look at James 1, 2 through 5, where it says, "Consider it all joy, my brothers and sisters, whenever you face trials of many kinds, because you know that the testing of your faith produces perseverance. Let perseverance finish its work, so that you may be mature and complete, not lacking anything. If any of you lacks wisdom, you should ask God and who gives generously to all without finding fault, and it will be given to you." And we're going to jump down to verse 12. It says, "Blessed is the one who perseveres under trial, because having stood the test, the person will receive the crown of life that the Lord has promised to those who love him." You ever had something happen where you're just shaking your fist at the Lord? How'd that work out? You still shaking your fist at the Lord? He didn't intend you to. He wants to build you. He wants to make you more and more into the image of his Son. Temptation is the negative reaction that can come from the test. Temptation, though, is not sin itself. Christ was tempted, yet sinned not. In Genesis 4, at verse 6, "Then the Lord said to Cain, why is your face downcast? If you do what is right, will you not be accepted? But if you do not do what is right, sin is crouching at your door. Temptation is crouching at your door. It desires to have you, but you must rule over it." That word for crouching, I build you a word picture. It's referring to an evil demon crouching at the door of a building to threaten the people inside, ready to ambush. So let's look at three ways that a temptation can come. It can come from within, for Jeremiah states in 17:9, "The heart is deceitful above all things and beyond cure. Who can understand it?" It can be from the world. Romans 12:2 says, "Do not be conformed to the pattern of this world." And then 1 John 2:16 says, "For everything in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life, comes not from the Father, but from the world." It can be from the enemy, Satan, as well. Matthew 4:1 says that, "Then Jesus was led by the Spirit into the wilderness to be tempted by the devil." So let's get a better understanding about what a temptation is not. James 1 at 13 says, "When tempted, no one should say, God is tempting me. For God cannot be tempted by evil, nor does he tempt anyone. But each person is tempted when they are dragged away by their own evil desire and enticed." Then after desire is conceived, it gives birth to sin. And sin, when it is full grown, gives birth to death. God says in our text that the testing or temptation is what is common to man. That I shouldn't be saying, well, it's just me. I'm the only one that has been diagnosed with this disease. Or I'm the only one that struggles with this back pain, this type of back. Nobody else feels the way I do. Or this situation is so devastating, so brutal. I'm just the only one. He says in the text, he is faithful and will not allow me to be tempted beyond what I can bear. Very comforting. This speaks directly to his sovereignty. This talks about he knows exactly where I am. He knows the level of my faith, the level of my abilities in him. He knows how far I am in my understanding, and he protects me. He knows what my maturity level is. He protects me to walk with me, to shape me. I'm not saying it's not going to be painful, because it's going to be painful. Life is full of pain, but he's going to walk with us. He's going to walk with us. He says he will also provide a way out, a way of escape. For years, you know what I thought this meant? I thought this meant that in a very bad time, God's pretty cool. He sets an escape hatch for me. So my deal was, man, I just looked around in difficult times. Where's that escape hatch? Drop down through it, right? For when God shuts a door, he opens a window. Where is that? Is that in the Bible? I don't think it is. He doesn't open no window. He just doesn't do it. That was LOLing. I'm just saying. You should have been laughing at that. LOL. So the way of escape, I just embarrassed the living daylights out of my kids. So the way of escape, this is ekbasis. And look, this is so important to understand that this is the successful way out. That's what that means. So that I can endure it. That's what he's talking about. And that word endure it is hupophero, to bear by being under, to endure, right? He wants the best for us, the best possible outcome, but we need to stay with him. We need to stay grounded with him. If we don't, it's not going to be so great, right? He calls us to that. He wants us to endure our trials as a trial, not as a sin. He doesn't want us to go through the sin. But look, there's hope all through that process. If you've let a trial turn into a temptation, turn into a sin, at any stage, he can help. He's going to be better helping you as a trial, right? Because we're not going to get bloodied and bruised and beaten, right? But he's there for us. He wants us to endure it as a trial. 1 Peter 5:8 says, "Be alert and sober-minded. Your enemy, the devil, prowls around like a roaring lion, looking for someone to devour. Resist him, standing firm in the faith, because you know the family of believers throughout the world is undergoing the same kind of suffering." Sound familiar? This is Peter saying the same thing that James said, the same thing that Paul said, right? You're not the only one. There's people all around the world. Do you know that there's people dying right now? They're killing Christians' children because they won't say that I'm not for Jesus. We're worried about losing our house, losing our job, being persecuted at work. Have mercy. But then he says, "And the God of all grace, who called you to his eternal glory in Christ," after you've suffered a little while, after he's lopped off some limbs, after he's heated you up and scraped off some of the dross so that pure silver that he's looking for, "will himself restore you and make you strong." Now back to my story. My mom, she turned me in. She did turn me in. she talked to the security guard before she turned me in, and she, I guess, told him to have your way with him. I don't want him ever to touch anything ever again. So he threatened me. He had police officers come in to take me away. They're going to take me away. It's pretty convincing as a 14-year-old young man. The actions of my mom changed me that day. You see, my mom decided to react to the test, not to entertain the temptation of saving her boy from a police record or from a bad reputation. In doing so, God provided her the best available outcome. So he expects us to walk with him. Think of it as a path down through a forest. Walking with him, and tests come. We stay grounded with our brothers and sisters in Christ. We pray and we read his word. We stay close to him, right? But when that trial comes and we choose to entertain the temptation and let it go to sin, think of it as Jesus staying on the path and us walking off of the path. And what happens, I know this happens for me, it may not happen for you, but what happens with me is the further I get off of the path, the more I start listening to the lie of the enemy, right? And the less I stop or start listening or keep listening to Jesus. Pretty soon, the lie that I'm hearing becomes the truth, and the truth that I've heard becomes a lie. And then I'm devoured. I'm devoured. But I want to leave you with hope. As a believer, we have this hope. Romans 8:28 says, "And we know that in all things God works for the good of those who love him, who have been called according to his purpose." You know what all means in the Greek? It means all. It means all. That's the translation. It means all. All things. You believe it? Even the crazy things, man, that we're not wanting to deal with. All things he works for the good of those that are called according to his purpose. Now, this is a promise, and this is a promise to believers. So, if you're here and you don't know Jesus, you can have this. You can have this assuredness. You can. He will work all things new. He creates beauty from ashes. He does that. He's the one that can restore what the locusts have eaten. If this is you and you're a believer and you struggle with the understanding of trial or temptation, you want to address who Jesus is in your life, both of you, come up. We'll talk to you. We're going to have the elders in front here. And we want to pray with you. We want to talk with you. We want to encourage you. But I'm going to have my daughters, Hope and Grace, come up, and they're going to sing a song. And after the song is done, feel free to dismiss. If you need to do a business with the Lord, please come forward. We'd be more than thankful to pray with you if you're looking for healing as well. Thank you guys for your time.
Overwhelmed, and I cannot hear your voice. I hold on to what is true, though I cannot see. If the storms of life they calm, and the road ahead gets steep, I will lift these hands in faith. I will believe. I remind myself of all that you've done and the life I have because of your Son. Oh, love came down to rescue me. Love came down and set me free. I am yours. I am forever yours. Mountain high or valley low, I sing out and remind my soul. I am yours. I am forever yours. When my heart is filled with hope, every promise comes my way. When I feel your hands of grace rest upon me, staying desperate for you, God, staying humbled at your feet, I will lift these hands in faith. I will believe. I remind myself of all that you've done and the life I have because of your Son. Oh, oh. Love came down to rescue me. Love came down and set me free. I am yours. I am forever yours. Mountain high or valley low, I sing out and remind my soul. I am yours. I am forever yours.
Thank you, girls. That was awesome. Mike, wonderful job, brother. And I'm just simply...